Good security is always a puzzle that is made by many pieces. And the use case that Falco solves, which is essentially runtime threat detection, is one important piece of the puzzle, but just one.
Welcome to the Open at Intel podcast, where we're all about open source, from software to security to innovation and beyond. I'm your host, Catherine Druckmann, an open source evangelist at Intel, bringing you leading-edge, free-ranging conversations from some of the best minds in the open source community. Let's get into it.
I spoke with Loris DeJuani, the CTO and founder of Sysdig, about open source projects like Sysdig and Falco that are focused on cloud-native security for containers and the Kubernetes space. There's a lot of good stuff in here. Enjoy.
Hi, Loris. Thank you. First, let me thank you for taking time out because everybody's very busy.
You're very welcome.
I'm really anxious to hear your full story because I have to say we've been across from your booth this entire time
exactly.
At KubeCon. So I feel like I know you on a deeper level already.
We're neighbors.
Yes, we're neighbors. So here we go. Tell us, first of all, tell us a little bit, introduce yourself, who you are, what you do in the open source community with Kubernetes and security and everything.
Yeah, my name is Loris DeJuani. I'm a CTO and founder of Sysdig. Sysdig is a company that offers a cloud-native security platform, ranging from containers, Kubernetes cloud, and so on. So I'm involved on a daily basis in Kubernetes and security. Sysdig is my second company. My first company was called Case Technologies and was the company behind an open-source network analyzer called Wireshark. So yes. I've done open-source pretty much my whole career, starting in 1998.
Fabulous. I've been around open source for quite a while, but I can't claim 1998.
Yeah,
So I
you're saying
that.
I'm old.
No, I too am. Mine was a bit of a career change, actually. So, mm-hmm.
No, mine was out of school. Yeah. Actually, when I was still in school.
Ah, love it.
Yeah.
So tell us about the open source project that you work on and that you support.
Yeah. Currently, Sysdig is a couple of open source projects. One is called Sysdig, and actually gave the name of the company. And Sysdig is a command line tool for a system inspection and troubleshooting with a heavy focus on containers. So when I talk about the open source Sysdig, I compare it a little bit to your TCP dump for system calls, with deep visibility in containers and Kubernetes. The other big project, which at this point is the biggest project I'm involved with, and I started this project in 2016, it's Falco. And Falco is essentially the industry standard for runtime security for containers and Kubernetes. And I normally compare Falco to the security camera for your containerized Kubernetes-based infrastructures.
Ah, cool. So Falco is now under the CNCF, correct?
That is correct.
Could you tell us a little bit about the history of the project, how it came about, how it's connected to Wireshark? Give us a little history lesson, if you will.
Yeah, for sure. So just for context, starting from Wireshark, Wireshark is a network analyzer that allows you essentially to plug your computer to a network, wired or wireless, and capture the packets. And it has a lot of functionality for protocol dissection and so on. So understanding essentially what's happening on the network by capturing the packets and observing the network traffic. I've been working on network packets the first part of my career, essentially. My PhD is about high-speed packet capture. And as I was saying, my first company was the company behind Wireshark. So what we did there was we were offering visibility and security based on packets. If you think about that, packets are a very rich data source that allows you to understand what's happening not only on the network, but users, applications, devices that are living on the network, right? So I used to say packets never lie at the time. But then fast forward to 2013, 2014, containers, Docker appears and launches containers. Kubernetes is released by Google. We are at the point in the world where the network is not anymore an easy vintage point, you know, when you are trying to figure out applications that are running on cloud instances. At that point, you know, the cloud provider, Amazon, Microsoft, Google, they own the network. You know, it's not easy to go and connect to the spam port of the router and so on. Also with containers, you know, it's normal for people to pack hundreds of containers in a single machine. So when you're sitting on the router to figure out what's happening on the network, you're missing data. So packets were actually lying. So we started trying to rethink, okay, if you can start from a blank sheet of paper and design for containers, for Kubernetes, for Linux, what would be the correct instrumentation? And we started working on looking at the ways to use the kernel of the operating system to get this data and interpret it. And initially it was based on, let's say, kernel modules. So you could sit in the kernel and see what every single container is doing without instrumenting the container. And that evolved later into using like eBPF and these technologies.
Ah, okay.
And sort of that was a change, a revolution in instrumentation that together with the SysDig team, we sort of pioneered. And that evolved into a system that could take these system call signals generated by eBPF and create sort of a rule system on top of them so that you could express stuff like, I want to know every time somebody's pointing a shell in one of my containers. Or I want to know every time one of my sensitive files is accessed, you know, for read or for write or something like that. So Falco allows you to express this kind of policies / rules and then translates this into things that can be evaluated by using data that is collected through eBPF from the kernel of the operating system. And then you will deploy these Falco sensors across your infrastructure. And they are, I was saying before, you know, like a network of security cameras that will alert you when something suspicious is going on in your applications and your infrastructure. So it's essentially a little bit of applying what we were doing with packets before, but using system calls and eBPF so that they support containers and modern cloud infrastructures.
You know, it's funny. I feel like I hear more and more about eBPF in the last few years and how important eBPF is to observability. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about, are you involved in the eBPF community as a result of your work on Falco?
Yeah, and Falco's been, I mean, in general, Falco's been probably one of the very first projects in cloud native that have started leveraging eBPF in like 2016, 2017, 2018. And definitely the first, let's say, the product that inspired essentially the whole industry to do runtime security and detection and response using eBPF. eBPF is perfect for this kind of use cases because, again, just a little bit of explanation. eBPF is like a little virtual machine that runs in the kernel of the operating system. So essentially the beauty of eBPF is you can write scripts in quotes because they are actual programs, but they are compiled to run in the kernel, but instead of like just running as code in the kernel, they are run by this virtual machine that is running in the kernel. The benefit is that you get complete versatile programmability of the kernel of the operating system, but at the same time it's safe because these programs are not just run by the kernel, but they are running in a safe sandboxed environment. For example, they are validated, you know, every program is validated before the kernel can run it so that it cannot access dangerous data or it cannot crash the system or stuff like that. So we have the beauty of essentially extending the kernel in a dynamic way through a script, any way we want, paired to the safety of doing that in a way that doesn't, you know, create security issues and also performance issues, you know, because it's very efficient. So it's a perfect platform to build a bunch of stuff and in particular to build data collection that can be used for security purposes, you know? And I've been involved in eBPF before it was eBPF, which
when it actually stood for something, Berkeley Packet Filter,
yeah. Packets, you know? And it was actually a packet filtering system originally designed to work inside leaf pickup and TCP dump and so on. And then it's been extended by the community to do much more than that. But since those days, you know, we were aware together with my team about the potential of having a virtual machine in the kernel of the operating system. And we've tried to bet very early on this with Falco.
Very cool. Tell me, I always like to ask this about people, of people maintaining open source projects. So you built it for a purpose, right? You just explained all of that. Do you ever see people using Falco in a way that surprises you, that we're not expecting?
Yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
Especially Falco is almost like two things, you know. One is the language and policy engine. And the other one is the data collection. And we sort of decoupled the two because we think that both have potentially value independently. In fact, number one, Falco, the policy language and engine, is used for other stuff. Like, for example, to define policies on cloud logs, like CloudTrail and this kind of stuff. So Falco, per se, can be used on more like the just Linux and containers. But also the instrumentation that is specific for with the eBPF and for Linux and containers is a piece that can be used to build your own arbitrary applications, you know. And there's many tools that have been built on top of that that allow you to, you know, like do captures and introspection and analysis. We've seen, you know, uses in the ecosystem that are very interesting. For example, yesterday here at KubeCon, there was a talk from Apple, and one of the developers from Apple was showing how she built essentially an anomaly detection engine that is able to look at containers, figure out what is their normal behavior, and then automatically essentially alert you when something goes outside the normal behavior. And that's built essentially on the data collection part, you know, and implements sort of a different way of doing detections on the same data collection. So plenty of very interesting uses and use cases that we're seeing on top of Falco, and especially the data collection side of it.
So what would you say to somebody, they're running their application, they feel very good about their security already, but maybe they're not, for whatever reason, I don't know, using runtime security detection. They're not using something like Falco. What would you say to them?
Yeah, first of all, good security is always a puzzle that is made by many pieces, you know?
I like that analogy.
And I see Falco and the use case that Falco solves, which is essentially runtime threat detection, as one important piece of the puzzle, but just one, you know? And I think that what I recommend is think about security from day one when you're working on your cloud native stack, security has to do with like users, infrastructure, applications. It has to do with you know, the way different personas, like your developers, for example, manage their vulnerabilities. It has to do with how you are able to detect and respond when some attack happens, and so it's multifaceted and multi-person. And the most important thing is that everybody's involved in a constructive way, and Falco in all of these solves the piece of the puzzle, which is detecting and responding to threats in real time.
I often think about when you talk about addressing security early on in your application's lifecycle, right? You want to, when you start thinking about planning what you're building, you should think of security at the same time, right?
Absolutely.
And how do you feel, just generally, not specific to any project or anything, but how can we as a community make that easier for developers? Because, again, there's so much more scrutiny on open source software today, I think maybe than ever, from governments and others. And I wonder, I sometimes feel like people are focusing on individual developers more than processes. It's like, we want to point fingers at somebody, and, you know, when a security incident happens, well, it's made by developers, so it must be their fault, right?
Yeah.
But I wonder if we can, you know, again, as a community, think of ways to make the developers' lives easier, to make all of this easier, so that we're just kind of secure by default, and lack of security is the anomaly.
Yeah, in general, I agree 100% with you. And really, making it easier for developers is really the key, you know? And traditionally, security has always been positioned in a way that is a little bit antagonistic, you know? It's almost like the security team fight.
They're the bad guy, right?
a little bit with the developers. When in practice, it's a common goal, you know? Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, it's a hard goal, you know, security and making sure that your software is secure and that your applications are not subject to attack. So since the goal is hard, all of the tests for everybody are not that easy. I think that in general, the more I think that even just as into some industry trends that we've seen in the recent years go in the right direction. Because, for example, the CI/CD pipeline is a good place to make security, bold security in a more natural way for the development team. When we say, for example, shift left security, mm-hmm. I think it's true that the sooner we can provide feedback to a developer about something that is security related, the better it is, the easier it is for this developer and the easier we make their life. Because, you know, addressing a security issue, for example, in your code, as you're typing in your Visual Studio code, and it's okay, you know, I have time now and I will update this dependency or I will change this code, is much better than telling the developer, okay, I'm blocking your application from going into production and you have to make a release, but you can't. And now you have to go back and start from the beginning, you know? So stuff like, you know, DevOps and DevSecOps, stuff like CI/CD and so on, are all ways that, in my opinion, help the different parts to be together and to catch this kind of stuff early. There's also technology specific. For example, one thing that this is more like specific to Sysdig and the kind of products that we build. But for example, one feature in our product is called Inuse, you know? And the goal of this is being able to prioritize the vulnerabilities based on the ones that are actually loaded and executed. I mean, very often we use maybe container images that have a lot of vulnerabilities, but there are just images. There are a bunch of libraries there that are vulnerable, but they are not even loaded by our software, you know? Mm-hmm. So these are still important to address, but I don't need to go to a developer, okay, stop what you're doing now to address this right now, you know? While a vulnerability that is actually loaded, for example, in your Java application or in your Go application, it's in production now, that one is more like, okay, this is really dangerous, so let's stop what we're doing. And by doing this kind of prioritization, I think that by living and breathing in the security industry, prioritization is becoming more and more an important thing, because prioritization allows us to go to the developers and tell them, of these 1,000 things, focus on these 10, you know? And these are the important ones. And it's much less overwhelming for them. And so it's becoming quite a little bit of a trend in the security provider industry and so in the domain where I personally operate.
No, I love it. Yeah, you really have to approach some things with kind of a triage mentality, right? You address the critical things first.
It's just like, because otherwise people are overwhelmed, you know?
Yeah, I like it. So what else are you excited about in the open source world? There, you know, you've been around since, I think you said, 98.
Yeah.
And the things are always changing, but there's always something very interesting going on in the open source world.
It's an ever-changing world, so it's hard for me. I would say, personally, as CTO of Sysdig, I've been spending quite a bit of time during the last year on AI, you know, and large
Everybody
language
says
models. If there's something, especially in open source, because, you know, what we're seeing in generative AI is, on one hand, the GPTs of the world, so these incredible giant models that are really, you know, showing us a new path, you know, for humanity. But at the same time, you're seeing a fantastic grassroots movement of people that are just, you know, taking like these llamas and so on, so taking these maybe smaller models, but doing a bunch of, you know, really cool things with them. And I think that in AI, the open source ecosystem in the long term is going to be actually even more important than the big players, Microsoft, Amazon, OpenAI, Anthropic, and so on. So if I have to pick an area where personally I have a lot of interest and a lot of excitement in open source right now, is seeing what the open source ecosystem is doing in AI.
What do you, since you, again, you are steeped in security, you know, very much so as CTO of Sysdig, what are you most optimistic about in this open source security community?
So if you think about security, it's almost like a battle between the good guys and the bad guys, right?
A bit.
The bad guys work together, collaborate, share information, you know, create exploits, and then they you know, share them and so on. In order for the good guys to be able to, you know, successfully fight this battle, they need to do the same. Seeing, you know, even just being here at KubeCon and being one of several security providers that are open source first, you know, I think that gives me hope, because security has largely been an industry where open source has been lagging a little bit, you know, and especially if you think about the big players in security, they tend to be companies that are pretty siloed and secretive and keep people in their walled garden. But things are changing, you know. Go around at KubeCon, go listen to the talks, you know. Network security, runtime security, there's a bunch of stuff that now is done in open source, and it's like the community working together. Like the beauty of Falco, for example, is like there's a rule set and it's community curated and driven, so everybody can go and add a Falco rule, you know, by just opening a PR for the latest vulnerability. It's a much better way to do this, because it distributes the benefits and the work to a large community that can work together and fight this fight together.
That's great. Yeah, I also get a sense that people are embracing the idea that we're kind of all in this together.
Yeah,
and it gives me a little bit of optimism as
well. I used to say, the future of security is open.
I love it. I love it. Well, that's I can't top that. I think that's a really great closing comment there. So I really appreciate, I've had a really great time. Is there anything that you wanted to say that you didn't get a chance to?
No, this was a very fun conversation, and thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Open at Intel. Be sure to check out more from the Open at Intel podcast at open.intel.com/podcast and at Open at Intel on Twitter. We hope you join us again next time to geek out about open source.